1-2 coming. And gets the curveball over, strike three call. Brandon Sproat has his first major league strikeout, and he gets around an opening walk. You think about Matt Chapman. His strike three called. Hayes down looking. 1-2 to McClain. And the curveball struck him out. 1-2 coming. And the curveball in there, strike three called. Friedel goes down looking. Sproat strikes out three in a row after a leadoff walk. 1-2 to McClain. And the curveball struck him out in the major leagues. Curveball strikes out Lux. Stewart takes a fastball for strike three called.
Obviously not the outcome you guys wanted, but still, impressive debut. What did you think of it?
I thought it was really good. Didn't have my best stuff out there, but went out there and competed for the team. We fell short today, but on to the next one.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 7th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love for you to join the newsletter community, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. If it's free, paid, whatever it is, we got a great chat going on over there. Of course, you want the premium content. All it does is cost you the price of a cup of coffee every month. Come on by and check it out. Welcome to another edition of the show, coming to you right after the Mets lost 2 out of 3 of the Reds. Brandon Sproat with his debut kids weekend. We have a two-part show for you today. In the back half, I sat down before today's game with baseball autobiographer, Eric Sherman, close friend of Davey Johnson's. We're going to remember the former Mets manager's life. The sad news, of course, came down about a day ago where Davey passed away at the age of 82. And a lot of memories. My first introduction of baseball were the late 80s Mets. You guys who've been listening a long time know that. So Davey was part of that. So special segment for me. But first to the present and to what's going on with the 2025 Mets. And I had labeled it Kids Weekend. And for those who are premium subscribers, you heard some of my thoughts about the Houdini Act on Friday. And I thought Friday's game was critically important because you had the veteran Peterson going. You wanted to start the weekend off on a good note. Mets offense got going on Friday. They put the recipe together to win a game on the road. Diaz made it a little bit interesting, but you put up runs on the board early. You got some good bridge work to Diaz, and then Diaz had to pull the Houdini Act up. And, you know, knowing that you had Singer and then Hunter Green, who, I mean, what you saw out of Hunter Green this afternoon, I mean, that's an ace. Really not much you can do. As a matter of fact, out of the three kids that I've gotten their debuts, McClain, Tong, and now Sproat, Sproat got the toughest assignment. Green was over the top good. I couldn't believe when the booth said this is the first pitcher against the Mets that struck out 12 or more since Mario Soto in 1983. I couldn't believe that, knowing all the great strikeout pitchers, you know, that the Mets have faced over the years, Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson are just a couple that come to mind. And the amount of strikeouts that are in the game, especially over the last, half decade, it's amazing. But anyway, the Mets got beat by a pitcher, quite honestly, a pitcher that they don't have, an ace that could go out there and just control the game, put up zeros on the scoreboard and just say, hey, offense, get me a couple runs and we'll be okay. Now, they've had those guys in the past. They had that with DeGrom. They had that with Scherzer. They had that with Harvey and to a certain degree with Syndergaard and Wheeler at times. But what you saw out of Hunter Green is what the Mets hope they can get potentially over the course of their careers with McClain and Sproat and Tong. And what I liked about, and I'll throw McClain in there because he pitched earlier in the week, and I know he's at another level right now. We'll see when he starts handling some adversity. Let's see how he adapts and adjusts. He had to do a little of that against Detroit earlier in the week. And in a lot of ways, the McLain debut, and I've said this a ton, the McLain debut has set up such a high expectation for Tong and Sproat and any of the young pitchers that come after him, whether it's Winiger or any of these guys. It's going to be interesting how expectations are managed, because not all of these guys are going to be all-stars. And quite honestly, I don't know if they're, depending on how this thing works out, they might have to trade somebody to get to where they got to get. I've actually got a lot of thoughts as I watch this team evolve throughout the month of August into September of where they need to go this offseason. It's kind of clear to me, but that's not the conversation for today. And I know, you know, there's a lot of frustration. I follow the chat that we have over at the newsletter. And if you want to just, look, you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com, you can bring you right to the Substack newsletter, and you guys could, you know, have your sign up, whatever it is, and get involved. The chat is actually quite active, and I pop in there. I wish I could pop in more. I'm trying to focus on the game, you know, from time to time. But I know there's a lot of frustration about the fact that this is a team that after last year, after, you know, even up until mid-June, played as the best team in baseball record-wise. They were at the top of the heap. And I think we had all thought that that's where this team was now. And that's they had arrived, that they had the breakthrough. And I think it's pretty clear to me that the breakthrough was not going to be able to happen until they started to incorporate their own homegrown talent to the core players that they had brought in, the core offensive players. And they have yet to bring in core pitching. And whether they do or not, we'll see. That might be a conversation. That will be a conversation for this winter. But when you start to really dissect and you look at how they've had to now not rely on one, but two, but three of the young pitchers, guys that were pitching in Brooklyn and Binghamton and Syracuse at various points over the last, you know, calendar year, you know, it really goes to show you that this team had not arrived yet, that they were built on a veteran and maybe a little bit more of a flimsy veteran foundation. And sure, you got Manaea and Quintana and Severino last year to give you big performances and all that happened in the second half of the season. But in reality, if this team is going to go forward and really be who you want them to be, which is a perennial contender and not somebody who right now is the leader of the wild card muck, because that's really what they are. I mean, you have your solidified wild card team like the Cubs, and maybe the Dodgers and the Padres have played a little bit down to the Mets level. But the Mets have really, when it's all kind of blended into the pot here, taken really hot start where they're one of the best teams in the league to when they've played like a bottom five, bottom 10 team. You know, they've come into this 85, 86 win muck. And that's really where they're going to probably wind up. I think they're on pace for 86 wins. I thought 90 would make them golden. I just don't think 90 is going to be something that they could achieve. They'd have to get really hot. You know, maybe the next homestand, they could maybe get a little bit hot and maybe that conversation becomes more real. I think 86 wins will do it. I think it'll be a lot tighter than you like. I think they've brought in teams like Arizona and San Francisco into the mix. And what I've said about this Mets team is, and I've always liked to compare these races to NBA games, you know, this is like an NBA game where there's a team that's clearly better than the opposition and they're just not shaking them. They're not shaking them, and it's a 5-point game, it's a 6-point game, and you feel okay they're going to find a way to win. They're not playing horribly, they're not playing great, there's ebbs and flows that are on both swings. But your fear is that, look, a turnover, a 3-pointer, and then a bad pass, and a stupid foul, and all of a sudden you got a tie game, and now you have to sweat and really work for it down the stretch in the final 2 minutes. And somehow there's how I think the fear of a lot of Mets fans is that you're going to be going down to that Miami series the last weekend of the season. You don't have the tiebreaker against Cincinnati. You do have the tiebreaker against the Giants. And one of these teams is going to be right there or tied or a game back. And the Marlins always love ruining Mets seasons and all this PTSD from before. I kind of announced that last year in Atlanta, the Mets broke the yoke. I think some of you are like, no, it hasn't for me. I need more examples. I need more success before it happens. But I think that that's what's frustrating all of you. And you're right. I mean, that's where this is. But what I think you have to really understand, and I think this starts with me, because I've been extremely hard on especially the young players, is I think that this season for a group of the roster, be it the Vientos, Beatties, Alvarez, portion of the roster. You want to throw Acuna in there, fine. And then now the pitching side, incorporating the three young pitchers. You've got about six or seven members of the 26-man roster that are coming in and really either having their first big league experience or their first big league adversity. The expectations have been raised on them. They're not able to ease into their development in a market like De La Cruz has in Cincinnati or in Pittsburgh, or, you know, maybe just be a component way down the line in a lineup. I mean, there's a number of them that were asked to play important roles competently, and they didn't do that. I think that was my frustration, is that for a large part of the season, the kids on the offensive side were not competent, and they've been very competent, particularly since August 1st. Not always great. There's still sometimes they drive you bananas with a bad at-bat or a bad throw. But, you know, they've been able to kind of navigate that. Now, I think what's important as you go down the stretch is that the Mets are really going to have to decide who's the keeper here, because there's going to be decisions, because there's more to come on the offensive side. There's Jett Williams, there's Ryan Clifford, there's Carson Benz, these guys that are really starting to push themselves into the mix. And yeah, you need depth, but there's only so many spots on this roster for those kind of players. So it'll be interesting about you know, how that goes down. And then you look at what they've had to do with the pitching staff, and imagine if these kids weren't ready, where this team would be. I mean, this could be very ugly. And possibly they would already be, without McClain, you know, 2 to 3 games south of their record, and probably right now right there with the Giants and Arizona and Cincinnati. And then you'd have yourself a real frustrating situation. Because the veterans like a Kodai Senga, who I've been hard on, and I got a lot of polarizing feedback about my show last week, have not been competitive and have not shown the courage of the competitiveness that I saw out of a Jonah Tong, that I saw out of Sproat today, I've seen out of McClain. And that, to me, has been the biggest takeaway. Even on Saturday night, where Tong admittedly didn't have great secondary stuff and relied too much on his fastball, I mean, he really got beat by three pitches. Gave up three hits, three pitches. You know, one was a, you know, pitch which was nearly over the head, and the Reds, and Sweeney was his name. I'm trying to remember the Reds player that hit that home run on Saturday night. Sal, hold on a second, Sal. What am I doing here? I'm losing it here, guys. That's what Sal Stewart. I'm sorry, Sal Stewart. You know, hit one, you know, dead center. It happens. But I saw a tenacious competitiveness out of Tong to bend but not break. You know, Sproat today got a little lucky early on with a nice play by Beatty, maybe some BABIP luck, but was able to settle down, struck out 7, looked really good in the middle innings, had one bad inning where De La Cruz got him. And I still think the play, you know, bad play by McNeil to throw the ball to home on that. He should have made sure Cruz stayed at second. And I think there's a lot of little things that happened this week on the defensive side, which really hurt the Mets. One was Alvarez's poor tag at the plate on Friday. I think, you know, what McNeil did today, you know, with the runner on second, was a poor play. So those are some of the things that I think the Mets have shot themselves in the foot defensively at times. But what I do know is this, is I'm willing to accept the results of where this team goes, with the kids putting in the competitive work and the competitive effort that I see, particularly since August 1st on the offensive side, and what I've seen since the pitchers have been called up. And I don't know if the pitchers being called up almost gave the young positional players a reason to say, okay, they're committed to me, relax. Maybe the trade deadline had something to do with that. I mean, don't discount the fact that all those kids, Beatty and Vientos in particular, probably were wondering, am I even going to be here August 1st? So maybe that had something to do with it. They're not going to admit that. But I think the thing I'm trying to say is, I think not making the postseason is a disaster, especially the teams that are behind the Mets. These are teams that are not at the Mets' payroll. These are teams that were not at the Mets' record at their apex in early June. These are teams that, you know, the Cincinnati's not a bad roster. San Francisco's not a bad roster. I mean, Arizona, I'm surprised at how bad they've been. But even with all that, the Mets should be able to navigate the next 2.5 weeks or so, win enough games. You're talking about another 10 victories. You know, you're not talking about them playing any better than 500, which is ultimately the bare minimum this team should be able to do, really. And if they do, you know, if they are competitive and you see progress from the young pitchers and you continue to see the young positional players put themselves in a position to be core members of next year's club, really, you know, you get to the postseason. At that point, it's a tournament. It's all 0-0. It's a totally different game. I could put my head on the pillow and feel like the season wasn't a total waste, because what I'm saying is we overrated this club going into the season. We took for granted the good fortune that happened last year, the good fortune with the starting pitching, particularly in the second half, the good fortune that they were able to navigate a really bad chemistry experiment bullpen that walked almost as many batters as an historically bad Chicago White Sox team. I mean, they were down there at the bottom with 100 lost teams like Anaheim and the White Sox and Colorado and teams like that and walks. And when you start to look at the things that have gone poorly for the Mets, I mean, they are now on their 45th pitcher that has thrown a pitch on the roster this year. All due respect, I mean, the last team to do that, and that tied the 2024 Miami Marlins, who are a putrid team. Teams that have the kind of revolving door of pitching that the Mets have had are usually not good teams. Just like last year, I said, teams that have the kind of bad walk rates out of the bullpen, you know, are usually not teams that make the postseason and go very far. And it did actually hurt them as they made their way to the championship series against a very good Dodgers team. So when you look at this team, how they relied on a lot of flimsy veterans that I think they thought that they could get the most of, where, you know, Stearns again, and some of it was bad luck with the Minter injury, decided to play fast and loose with the bullpen, you know, earlier in the year like he always does. I think now you see with Tong and Sproat and McClain that rather than make a reactionary move and bring in a veteran that might have blocked them or possibly overreact to the injuries to the rotation in mid-June, he decided to go with Hageman and Davinsky openers and just try to figure out a way to, you know, Brandon Waddell, all these guys that actually didn't do too poorly, but tax the bullpen and put them in non-competitive games sometimes. And, you know, I think that while we were all saying, go out and get an arm, go out and get an arm, I mean, what Stearns was seen on the back end, and you even have heard a little rumblings about it post-trade deadline, is that the kids you see that are now up were probably going to have to be in a deal for like a Mason Miller or an Alcantara or something like that. And, you know, the Mets are just not in a position to do that. The beauty and the scary part about all this, and we've talked about it for weeks, is that the future of the Mets really depends on them hitting on these kids. Now, I'm not saying they're going to hit on all three of them. I don't know yet. It's too soon to tell. Four starts is not enough to really make an assessment on McClain. It's very promising. Tong is two starts, and we just saw six innings out of Sproat. And again, like I said, there's more kids down in the minors that we'll probably be talking about over the next, you know, 12 months. Let's see at the All-Star break, you know, as we head into the trade deadline next year, what this farm system also has in terms of depth. But if the Mets are going to be who they say they are, they're going to have on both sides of the ball, young, controllable players perform competently and better. And a couple of them might have to become borderline All-Stars. You need to have, at the very least, some of these guys be another Jeff McNeil. You know, is there another Pete Alonso in there? I don't know. Is there a David Wright or a Jose Reyes in a Benj or a Clifford or a Jet Williams? I don't know. Be nice. At some point, you can't go out and spend money on another Lindor or another Soto. You get the point all the time. And on the pitching side, because of the cost of pitching, because of how schizophrenic it is, how injury prone it is, you have to develop your own starters. You have to de-emphasize a rotation that, since Stearns has taken over, has been a scrap heap. And some of it's high-level scrap heap with guys like Severino. They weren't completely wasteful. They had a resume, but generally a scrap heap rotation. Guys like Manaea, can we take what they are and get them to a more competent level? Severino, they rolled the dice on Montas. Clay Holmes coming out of the bullpen. These are things that you can do, but you can't do it with 3/5 of your rotation. You can't do it with 3/5, 4/5 of your rotation and a pseudo innings eater in David Peterson. You need to have some high potential arms. Look at Hunter Green in Cincinnati. Look at what he brought to the table today. That's what the Mets need. Even Singer, came up in the Kansas City organization. There's a guy with some high potential, and now he's in the Reds. Right, the Reds have some really interesting arms over here, and the Mets need to get to that point. And maybe they're here sooner rather than later. But that's why I think the rest of the year we need to sit back. We need to enjoy these kids. We need to be patient with their results. And I know what you're saying. Well, Mike, you weren't patient with Kodai Senga. And I'll tell you, that's another key point here. The Mets have to commit right now that we're year three into Kodai Senga. They cannot go into this offseason and build this rotation around this guy anymore. And I don't care when he comes back. He goes down. He's going to go down for a couple of starts. And I'm not here to give him any applause. I know he had options, but part of the contract was he didn't have to go down. He needed the permission. The agent worked something out with the Mets. I'm sure there's some financial compensation. And he felt respected. The Mets didn't embarrass him. All due respect, Kodai, you should have been the one to offer to go to the minor leagues, because the fact that you even were considering working out your issues in the middle of a wild card race with the non-competitiveness that we've seen for the better part of 2 months is kind of selfish. And I don't know Kodai Senga, and maybe again, I think a lot of people are saying I'm overly tough, but the fact is we're on year three. He had a nice run there in the second half, a lot of garbage time there when the Mets were out of it in 2023, spent most of 24 on the IL, was off to a nice start, but the peripherals indicated he was over-indexed on a lot of things throughout April, May, and June, got hurt again, and has been bad ever since, and non-competitive, and you cannot have a pitcher that, let's defend him here, came into the Mets, eyes wide open. We were told there's health issues, okay, particularly with the elbow or the shoulder, and we've already seen shoulder issues. So shame on the Mets. They built the six-man rotation. They built all around it. My thing is this. If Kodai Senga wants to be part of this train going forward, he figures out how to stay healthy and be part of a five-man rotation, just like every other big boy pitcher in the big leagues. If you want to say you want to space him out and occasionally get, a swing guy in there, which is very difficult because the more you space out pitchers, those then take starts away from everybody else, and one non-competitive game turns into two non-competitive games. All of a sudden, you have a half dozen of non-competitive or starts from, spot starters, and if you lose a division or a wild card by a game or two, it adds up. So to me, I think the real thing here with these kids is, unless they need a six-man rotation, which I don't know why they would long range, I think if that's where the sport's going, you don't have enough pitching to really go around, especially with expansion potentially in 5 years, to have six quality starters. They got to, five is good enough. To me, that's where the Mets need to be. If Kodai Senga can't be a veteran in the back half of this rotation with potential top of the rotation upside, then he's not. There's no place for him there. Then he needs to, work with his agent and see where he could go. I'm really serious about that, because when I go out and I see these three young kids who were in Bodunk minor league cities the last 12 months, give the Mets against a decent hot Reds offense on the road a decent outing, a guy like McClain, time and time again, who may go down as saving this wild card situation, and I see another guy who, had to wait 72 hours to figure out if he wanted to go to the minor leagues when he's been vastly uncompetitive, it does rub me the wrong way. And I'm sorry if you were offended by the way I talked about Kodai, because I did take how he was personally last week, because I don't like non-competitive BS performances. And that's what Kodai Senga has been for a long time, guys. He's been a lot of BS. And when I see these kids go up there, this is the future, not Kodai Senga. The scrap heap guys, you want to bring them in, fifth starter, give them a shot, fine. Maybe there's another Severino or Sean Manaea you could bring in. You're going to need those guys. Look, Peterson is a guy that, with the kids maybe morphing into more mid to top of the rotation, potentially could settle himself in as a number three, number four. You're asking a lot of him to be an ace. It's nice to see young pitchers, unlike Tyler McGill, who is the ultimate tease, go out there and perform and not labor through a game and just give you one or two good innings. I mean, the eye-opening situation here with these young kids is that there's hope. And I think the frustration the fans have had for a large chunk of the year has been us expecting a 95-win team or believing that there's a 95-win team in front of us, when in reality, the infrastructure wasn't good enough to be really more than a mid-80s team that if they could get a hot week and maybe push into the 90-win range. And shame on me, I should have been more on that train. And I know there's many of you, and you know who you are, that either tweeted at me or emailed me and told me all along, there's problems here. And I kept saying, don't worry, I believe that, you know, they brought guys in, these veterans will figure it out, Stearns knows what he's doing, the pitching guys in the pitching lab know what they're doing. But the pitching lab isn't magic. You know, Montas is an example. Came here, you know, obviously he doesn't have health, but I also know that, you know, I've read some things where he didn't actually embrace the lab as much as, let's say, a Griffin Canning did when he was here. You know, there's a lot of differences where the lab is a resource and these guys have to be able to, you know, grab it, you know, and thrive with it. So, more about the staff going forward. That's an off-season conversation. But I think I could put my head on the pillow and I think right now, sit back, see what these kids have. You have your core players performing at a high level. Soto's been carrying them and being everything that you could ask about from the offense. Lindor is back to being Lindor. Alonso is doing his thing. You've got a good core of offensive players there. Vientos and Beatty and Alvarez could go around the universe there. They could be the surrounding pieces. You know, you want to throw McNeil into the core, you know, Nimmo, things like that. And then, you know, you see what you could get out of the young kids. And look, as far as the bullpen, what you saw on Friday night is what you're going to have to do to win. You're going to have to stay away from Helsley. You've got Diaz, live or die. You've got Rogers, who again looked good today with his soft contact. You know, maybe you throw a little Reed Garrett in there in the sixth inning. And then you go with a Brooks Raley, and then you spot in a Gregory Soto against lefties, and that's it. Yeah, I talked about Hegemann, and I know Hergert got a chance yesterday, you know, as well. I think Hegemann is a guy that I still would keep an eye on. You know, maybe they're holding him back for some bulk work. I thought maybe I would have given him a shot over Ryan Stanek the last couple of nights, and Stanek is a guy I think they have to start to think about moving away from. But that's not the main point of today's program. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to split the shows up, so you're not just going to get one drop. It's going to be two. Now, if you're a premium subscriber, it'll all be in one drop. I'm going to drop them in two so that you can listen to my commentary on, you know, Kids Weekend, and then if you want to take some time later in the week or right away and listen to my look back with Eric Sherman about the life and career of Davey Johnson. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears, look back at the life and career of Davey Johnson with author Eric Sherman right after this.